This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Would you like 2023 to be tax-free? Hey, it's Lars. Then make plans to join David Moore for a free webinar Wednesday, March 29th at 10 a.m. Pacific Time for the latest 1031 exchange news and updates. For those asking for the nitty-gritty of a 1031 exchange, this is your class to learn the basics of the 1031 exchange, what qualifies, and how to apply the process. In this webinar, you'll learn the lingo, a glossary of terms, what you should know about doing an exchange in 2023, the benefits and pitfalls, and flipping with a 1031 exchange. If you're an Oregon broker, this 1031 exchange class provides attendees with 1 hour of core real estate continuing education and the knowledge to identify and apply the 1031 exchange to client investment real estate transactions. Plus, anybody who signs up gets a copy of the slides and a link to view the session again. For more information and registration, go to 1031exchange.com. You've worked hard to earn your money. Equity Advantage works hard to keep it yours.
We got 12 million more votes than we had in, as you know, in 2016. I actually say we did far better in that election. Got the most that anybody's ever gotten as a sitting president of the United States. Most people understand what happened. That was a rigged election.
That, of course, is the voice of the finest American president since Ronald Reagan. And this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to the program, and we're going to welcome your phone calls, too. I do want to talk about the chaos at the border because of Joe Biden's mishandling of the border. It is criminal. I think it's actually impeachable, and we'll get to that in detail today. But I want to first talk about the fantastic job that President Trump did, not in exactly a friendly environment. He was on the Chicken Noodle News Network, CNN, which was failing rapidly without Donald Trump, so they invited him back to do a network town hall, something that slow Joe Biden won't even attempt. You watch. He's going to run for president, and his people will say, oh, there are all kinds of reasons that slow Joe cannot take on a town hall environment. If you remember how badly Biden flubbed the town halls during his last presidential campaign, and by the way, these days, he's farther into mental failure these days, so it's really no surprise. Joe Biden's going to avoid them. Donald Trump will go right into the lion's den and go up against the worst on CNN. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to jump into what we call, and we live up to it, the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And if you happen to be a naysayer, you disagree with me, you go right to the head of the line. Just stick around for a few questions from me. I might actually show the folly of your position if you've got the guts. If you'd rather email, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. And of course, there's our Twitter poll. Brand new question from the news of the day every day. We'll get to that a bit later. You find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 23 plus years. Glad to have you on board as well. And thanks to all our affiliate stations around the three states. Of course, one of the first places that CNN anchor Caitlin Collins, who was not exactly up to the job last night of taking on Donald Trump, one of the first places she went was the incident on January 6, 2021, the Capitol Hill riot that even the FBI, Joe Biden's FBI, agrees Donald Trump did not incite. Collins didn't even try to suggest that Trump started the riot. I think they've given up that line of argument altogether. But she did blame him for not stopping it once it started. Unfortunately, poor Caitlin Collins did not have her act together, and President Trump did. Take a listen.
When they went to the Capitol and they were breaking into the Capitol, smashing windows, injuring police officers, why did it take you 3 hours to tell them to go home?
I don't believe it did.
I don't believe it did. Now you think, well, he's just denying it. You see, every reporter, including yours truly, truly loves the gotcha question. If you can pull it off, great. If you can't, you look like a fool. CNN apparently can't play in the big leagues, and certainly not Caitlin Collins, because asking that question only did a gotcha on the liberal news network itself. Trump managed to flatten Collins' question by simply reaching into the breast pocket of his suit and pulling out a printout of the tweets that he sent, not only on the day of January 6th, but on the day before. He pulls the document out of his pocket and says,
Here it is. Take a listen how that exchange went.
Oh, let me pull it out. I have to pull it out. On January 5th, the day before, I said, please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful. Stay peaceful. This was the day before. If you look, January 6th, this is at 2:30. I am asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful. This is right after as it was happening. But what happened is they took it down. I don't know why. I think they took it down because it was so good. They didn't like it being up there. I am asking, this is, and we didn't know until I got it back. I am asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful.
Joe Biden has claimed that five police officers died that day, and CNN still lets him get away with that lie. No cops died that day, nor on the days following because of January 6th. Even Brian Sicknick, the officer who a medical examiner determined died of natural causes, a death that Joe Biden has falsely blamed on January 6th and Donald Trump. But there was one woman who died that day, and Trump, like me, does not want to let Americans or Joe Biden forget about her murder.
Over 140 officers were injured that day.
And a person named Ashley Babbitt was killed.
Yes.
You know what? She was killed, and she shouldn't have been killed. And that thug that killed her, there was no reason to shoot her. At blank range, cold blank range, they shot her. And she was a good person. She was a patriot.
There was no reason.
And he went on television to brag about the fact that he killed her.
And that is, in fact, true. Fact is, Ashley Babbitt was murdered by a Capitol cop. No murder charges were ever brought. The cop wasn't even fully investigated. He got away with it. Remember August 10 months ago when the FBI launched its outrageous raid on the personal home of a former American president for the first time in American history? And liberals predicted 10 months ago a quick indictment of Donald Trump over classified documents, an indictment that has never come. Well, CNN wanted to know about that, too. Take a listen.
The question that investigators have, I think, is why you held on to those documents when you knew the federal government was seeking them and then had given you a subpoena to return them.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Can I talk?
Yeah, what's the answer?
Do you mind?
I would like for you to answer the question.
Okay, it's very simple to answer.
That's why I asked it.
It's very simple to... You're a nasty person, I'll tell you.
Can you answer why you held on to the documents?
I was negotiating and we were talking to NARA, that's Washington, to bring whatever they want.
Now, whatever they want. And Donald Trump was in negotiations. Now, how about the documents in Joe Biden's garage? And it is Chinese communist-funded think tank at University of Pennsylvania and at that office in Boston and who knows where else. Joe Biden's actually gone on television and confessed that he's been stealing classified documents since his early days as a U.S. senator almost 50 years ago. Now, as a vice president, as a president, he could take classified documents under certain circumstances. As a senator, he had no right to do it whatsoever. As for the decision this week by a New York jury that Donald Trump was not guilty of raping E. Jean Carroll and that he was guilty, though, of sexual abuse and of defamation. They ordered him to pay $5 million, which I'd kind of expect from a New York jury. Trump called her a whack job. Says he doesn't even know the woman, and he accused her of hanky-panky after the jury awarded her $5 million in damages. I would say that if you were scoring this one, it would be Trump 1, CNN 0. Glad to have you with me on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, bags and bags of cash. I don't mean metaphorically, I mean actual bags of cash going from the weed merchants of LaMota to state officials in the state of Oregon. I'll give you the details coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right, you know you got a right to say. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
It seems that Oregon Democrats went deeper into the weeds than we even knew before. It made Oregon Secretary of State Shamia Fagan resign from office a few days ago. What's worse, Democrats refused to actually launch a criminal investigation of Fagan. Reporter Sophie Peel, full credit where it's due, Sophie Peel of Willamette Week, broke the career-ending story that Fagan and other Democrats took literally hundreds of thousands of dollars from the weed retailer LaModa, and we know that they now did it with sacks of cash. I'm not using a metaphor. I mean, they had actual stacks of cash. Oregon allows unlimited campaign contributions, but it demands that you document them. How you got the money, who you got it from, and what you spent it on. That is required in the law. Of course, that law is enforced by, who else, Shamia Fagan until a few days ago. Cash, as the money guys say, is fungible. Who's to say where those bundles of Benjamins came from and where they went to? Fagan was on LaModa's payroll, taking graft that totaled 50% more than her state paycheck. Who else got literal bags of cash? Governor Tina Kotek, Democrat. Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner, a Lake Oswego Democrat. Future PAC, that's the one that finances Oregon House Democrats. Two $10,000 contributions in cash. State Labor Commissioner and Democrat Christina Stevenson. Cool, green, untraceable cash. The scope of it even stuns liberal lawyer Jason Kefauri. Quote, that kind of system allows for political corruption. How do you know that all of the cash went into the campaign account and not into the candidate's pocket? Indeed. Oregon's last corrupt governor, John Kitzhaber, resigned in disgrace over far less. I'm willing to bet that Johnny Kitzhaber is grinding his teeth about that right now. Our question of the day. You know, you've heard a lot of suggestions that we don't need to send the police to deal with homeless people or people who are mentally ill. We should send a social worker. Hold that thought in mind as you consider this. A Beaverton police officer was strangled while he was checking on a man lying on the sidewalk, according to police. A man reported lying on the sidewalk, this is from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, Oregon Live, attacked and injured a Beaverton cop who was sent to check on him, according to the police. Beaverton police identified the man as William Joseph Schott, 35, of Portland, and they say that Schott strangled the officer Tuesday morning. The officer, Michael Smith, suffered head and neck injuries, was treated and released at a hospital. Think about this. If you'd sent a social worker instead, at least police are trained in control holds. They have a gun. They have a taser. They usually have a baton. They know how to escape from somebody who's attacking from them. And still and yet, Michael Smith suffered head and neck injuries. How might that encounter in Beaverton on Tuesday have turned out if you'd sent a social worker instead and then tell me you think it's a good idea? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Better Basements and Waterproofing. Water in your crawl space or basement? Call Better Basements and Waterproofing. Don't stop,
grow. Today, I'm going to give the Daily Grill to this whole idea. The whole idea that hiding a dead baby's body should no longer be a crime in Oregon. And I know you're going to say, Lars, that can't possibly be true. Let me cite chapter and verse. The same bill that Democrats want to pass in Salem. The bill that Republicans walked out of the legislature to stop. The bill that allows 10-year-old girls to get abortions without their parents even knowing about it. The bill that does all those other things like protects transgender rights without parental involvement. Guess what else it does? Right now, under the law, if a woman or a girl has a baby and lets the baby die and then conceals the body of that baby, say dumps it in a trash can or buries it in the backyard, it is that ugly. That is a misdemeanor crime in Oregon right now. Guess what? Our Democrat friends want to make it legal. They, in the bill, 2002, want to eliminate, ORS means Oregon Revised Statute. It's the laws of the state, whereas Washington State is different. Oregon Revised Statute 167.820, ORS 161.005, makes it would make it illegal, eliminating that law, would make it legal to hide dead baby bodies. I'm not exaggerating. Dead baby bodies can be hidden without it being a crime. And it would not even be a misdemeanor as it is today. Now, if you're a liberal or a Democrat, and I know I have some of both in my audience, and I'm glad to have you, and you voted for any of these people, do you still support them if they want to make it legal to hide the dead body of a baby? And if so, I'll take the naysayer call. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. By the way, I'll ask the naysayer, was it right for Republicans to walk out of the chamber so they didn't pass that monstrosity, making hiding dead baby bodies legal? I think they were right to walk out. They should stay out. Shane writes in with today's best email, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Lars, I wanted to make sure you knew about the Bellingham City Council and the Whatcom County Council deciding to withhold funds that they obtained from the American Rescue Plan, Congress. They decided to withhold almost $1 million from the Lighthouse Mission Ministries because the council says the mission ministries don't support LGBTQIA+ WTF like they think they should. I've seen the good work the mission has done. I've even volunteered in their events. They provide shelter, but also structure and support to people who are homeless or in a very rough place in their life. I'm not a Christian, but I really think the mission is doing good work. And if the help they provide through their faith-based organization has requirements for employment, I don't have a problem with that. The people who seek services have to obey their rules and participate in mass. For that, they receive shelter, food, and support to rebuild their lives. Bellingham really has no other origination that does the work, organization that does the work for them. And I think it's selfish of the city council to deny these funds because they want to hire people that share the values of this organization and carry out their work. If you haven't seen it, here's a link to the story signed Shane. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And let me start for the calls on a conspiracy theory Thursday with Tim, who's calling in from, where are you calling in from, Tim? In Washington?
I'm in Everson, Washington.
Everson, Washington. All right, what's on your mind? We're close to the break, but what's on your mind?
Okay, real quick here. It was only the employees of the Lighthouse Mission. It wasn't anybody they render services to, but right. The reason I called was, how did we get where we are now? Why is there so much division? And I don't want to hear that it was COVID or Trump.
No, I won't. I'll give you a simple answer, Tim. You get divided when different people have vastly different solutions to a problem. If you go to the city council and the solution to a problem is add 5 cops or subtract 5 cops. That's not terribly radical. I mean, it has a bad effect. But if you come in and say the solution to our border is to throw it wide open and let 9 million people come in illegally, and our solution is we should enforce the border and have as few illegal entries as possible, that's a wide gulf between 9 million and as close to zero as you can get. And on every subject, like Joe Biden saying, we're not going to drill for oil. We don't want you to use natural gas. We want to ban your natural gas stove and force you to buy an electric car. When you have one side doing outrageous answers, there's going to be division, and there should be. Thank you, Tim. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You should know that while you're hearing a lot about Title 42 expiring today and the anticipated tsunami of invasion that's going to come behind that, and put this in context, if we have a tsunami of invasion, that means the last 2 years with 9 million plus illegally crossing into America was not the tsunami. That was just the front end of the flood. This is when the real storm arrives. That's how bad it is. But is it possible that President Joe Biden's so-called Homeland Security Department is literally coordinating secretly by an app called WhatsApp, to coordinate with Mexico to facilitate the quick entry illegally of huge groups of illegal aliens. Now, I know you're saying, Lars, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but that's way too crazy. So I want to bring on my friend Mark Krikorian, who is at the Center for Immigration Studies. He's its executive director. Mark, have I overstated what the Biden administration is doing to facilitate the entry of huge groups of illegal aliens?
No, not at all. Our man on the border, Todd Benzman, has been down in Matamoros, which is the sort of farthest south part of the border near the Gulf of Mexico. And he's watching these, he's on the Mexican side, Fox News and others are afraid to go onto the Mexican side, so they're just staying on the U.S. side and taking pictures of Todd. But anyway, Todd is there with these, you know, thousands of migrants, you know, Venezuelans, a lot of them, but others as well. And he sees like 100-150 of them get up all at once and then go down to the border, and the others wait. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, another batch gets up. And he's like, you know, what's going on here? So he talked to the Mexican immigration officials, because there were Mexican immigration officials there. He said, what's going on? And they were like, oh, yeah, well, our superiors are working with the Border Patrol, and Border Patrol is telling us when they're ready to handle another batch of illegals, so that there's not too many of them pooling up on the U.S. side to make sure that it doesn't look bad. So they're coordinating the crossing of these people. Now, working with Mexican authorities is a good thing, but we should be working with them to stop illegal immigration, not to facilitate and accommodate it and make sure it doesn't, you know, doesn't hurt the administration politically.
I'm talking to Mark Krikorian. We've been talking to Mark for decades about CIS and the work they do, which is usually data-driven work, and we turn to them for all the information. But, Mark, the minute I read this report about what Bensman had come up with, I began to think, like, getting on an airplane where they don't have everybody board at once. They say, okay, group one goes, group two goes, group three goes, so that you can, as quickly as possible, speed people through. That's what the White House and Homeland Security is doing, right?
That's exactly what it is. Yes, it's kind of like on an airline, boarding group one, you know, line up now or whatever. Turns out the illegal aliens are the whatever it is, the global executive premier or something that gets aboard before everybody else. But yes, that's exactly what it is. And that is directly contrary to what the Border Patrol is supposed to be doing. And it's not the Border Patrol's fault. This is the Biden administration's fault. They're the ones telling them what to do. They're the ones appointing the, you know, the political appointees that are pulling the strings here. And it's outrageous. The interesting thing is there's a fly in the ointment, the monkey in the wrench, as, you know, as they said in Die Hard. And that is the Texas Department of Public Safety, state troopers. Because when Governor Abbott saw and learned about what was going on down there, he actually sent troopers. And there's video of it. Our guy, again, Todd Bensman, he's on on Twitter at Bensman Todd. He has pictures of state troopers standing there on the U.S. side of the bank behind the razor wire that they put up and telling the illegals, no, you know, no, you're not coming through here. No passer on. And they actually have, you know, pepper ball riot control stuff as well. So that is, I don't think it's going to stop it, because the administration, the federal administration, going to find ways of letting these people in. But Texas is at least trying to do what it can to interfere with this ridiculous policy by the Biden administration.
Hey, Mark, I want to ask you about this, too, because this, I think, people should find troubling. You say, well, so the Biden administration is doing this, and what's their goal? Their goal is to speed illegal entry, but their goal is also to make it not look like a big problem. Because if 10,000, which they're doing 10,000 a day plus right now, if 10,000 people come over and they all kind of jam up on the American side of the border, then TV news gets pictures of that and Americans say, what the heck is this, an invasion? And if a week's worth piled up, say, on the north bank of the Rio Grande, and it's 70,000 people, the population of a medium-sized town, piles up there, it looks bad for the White House. So part of this is about looks. Am I wrong?
Oh, almost all of it is about looks. I mean, the Biden administration does not believe that its job is to stop this flow of people. They consider their job to be to accommodate the flow. What they're concerned about is that it looks bad, as you suggested. And this has been the case for a while. If you think back to, I guess it was last year, maybe a year ago now, when all of those people were, all those Haitians were camped under the bridge in Del Rio, Texas. This is where that fake whipping thing, the story happened, where the Border Patrol supposedly was whipping. It's all a total lie. No, the president repeated the lie. He's never apologized for it. But the point is, that was an issue, because Fox News had drone cameras and showed all of those people, 15,000 maybe or more, parked under the bridge on the U.S. side. That's what they want to avoid. It's not that they don't want these people coming in. They don't want bad news pictures.
And by the way, Mark, the other thing I noticed, one of my favorite ideas in the law is called mens rea. My audience knows I talk about it all the time. It means the guilty mind in Latin. Because if you're doing something legitimate, you don't hide what you're doing. But if you know you're doing something that's, you know, criminal, illegal, immoral, unethical, you try to hide it. Describe how they're using WhatsApp and an encrypted WhatsApp to transmit these messages between Joe Biden's Border Patrol, and I'm not blaming the individual officers, and the Mexican authorities. They're hiding the communications, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. WhatsApp is just a messaging app. It's just that we don't use it a lot in the United States. But, I mean, I have it on my phone because we use it a lot in Mexico and in Europe as well. So it's a very widespread messaging app. But what they're doing is they're using an encrypted channel on WhatsApp to communicate, the Border Patrol to communicate with the Mexican authorities, to tell them when, you know, when boarding group one should be escorted down to the river and cross over to the United States. And they don't want anybody to know about it. They didn't tell anybody about it. But the reason we know about it is that our analyst was down there, and he just asked the Mexican officials. Now, they were not high up guys. They were just sort of regular people out there in the field. And so what do they know? They're just actually telling the truth. They're not politicians. And that's the only reason we know about this. We'll see if anybody, if any of the legacy media picks up on it and makes the administration in Washington talk about it.
Well, Mark, I'd remind you, and you know this, Hillary Clinton decided to have a secret server. Why? Because she knew she was going to be talking about stuff that couldn't be in the public record. If our government, our federal government through Border Patrol, is operating in a way to deliberately hide communications with a foreign country, with the officials of a foreign country, and doing it to hide what's being said, they're breaking a whole stack of federal laws. And if they're doing it at the behest of either Mayorkas or Joe Biden, you know, I would call that high crimes and misdemeanors. They're conspiring to facilitate the illegal entry of tens of thousands of people a day, and they're hiding the information so that it doesn't matter how many FOIA forms you file or I file, we'll never get the documents because they're not communicating through official channels. I would say Joe Biden and Mayorkas have the guilty mind, mens rea. Mark, thanks so much for what you do. That's Mark Krikorian, the executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Email talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll, and I'll tell you about that in just a moment. And coming up, some Northwest schools want to cancel Mother's Day. We'll talk about that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network, where we've been serving the Pacific Northwest for the past, 23 and a half years at this point. Our Twitter poll today, and I think this one is a very significant issue. If you haven't noticed, there is a real lack of state government workers. Now, ordinarily, I want state government to be cut down to size. But when it comes to things like running the essentials, say DMV offices in Oregon that have run short of staff, or in Washington state, when you have mountain passes that have to be cleared of snow, and the governor, under the jab policy, said you either get the COVID jab or you get fired. And they sent literally 2,000 employees down the road. Now, I know that the state's going to try and be sneaky about this and say, well, we didn't actually fire them. What we told our employees was, if you don't have the jab, you can't work for us anymore. And they quit voluntarily. I mean, it's that kind of nuanced, only a lawyer would appreciate it, kind of nonsense from Governor Jay. Well, thousands of government workers got fired. And I would say, effectively, if your boss says, you can't work here anymore, but I'm not firing you, you're being fired. Thousands of government workers got fired for not taking the jab. Should the states hire them back? And in this case, even though I'm going to talk about the specifics of Washington state, I mean Oregon as well. Governor Jay Inslee, this came down yesterday, will lift an order that requires state workers to be vaccinated against COVID-19. He announced that yesterday. The order has been one of America's strictest public health measures. Inslee rolls back the mandate. The move was, as described by the fish wrapper in Seattle, the move was one of the governor's most controversial pandemic orders, as nearly 2,000 Washington employees opted out of getting the jab. Translation, they got fired. Now, we can debate all day long about whether, if your boss says, you can't work here anymore, but I'm not firing you, has he truly fired you or not? I think it's a distinction without a difference is what it comes down to. So my question now is, if Jay is now saying, we will hire people who have not been vaccinated. Okay, good. How about the 2,000 that you sent packing? How about hiring them back? Now, I know Jay doesn't want to do that, Jay Inslee, because he'd say, well, if we hire them back, we're admitting we were wrong, and we might have to give them back pay and a sincere apology and all that. And then imagine this. If you say, well, Lars, but those snowplow drivers and the WSDOT drivers and the ferry pilots and operators, they can just come back to work. Imagine yourself if you've been 15 or 20 years on the job for the state of Washington, a good, solid employee, and you get fired for not taking the jab. And then they say, you can come on back, but we're not giving you 15 years credit on vacation. We're not giving you 15 years credit on pension. We're not giving you 15 years credit on anything, seniority or anything else. But yeah, come back to work for us at bargain basement salaries at the bottom of the pile. Would you do that? Or do you think Jay Inslee ought to say, would you people please come back? We made a colossal mistake. It has not only cost those workers, it has cost the citizens of the state of Washington. If you haven't noticed, the last couple of winters have been, oh, gee, the passes are closed and we can't get them plowed. Don't know why. They know exactly why this happened. Find the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Thousands of government workers got fired in both Oregon and Washington for not taking the jab. And I'd apply this to the hospitals, too. Should the states and the hospitals hire them back? Today's Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Joseph in St. Helens, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Joseph, what's on your mind, sir?
Well, I heard you saying about the social workers on call, and I had an incident happen just on Tuesday night where a good friend of mine, daughter's, you know, a good friend of mine, husband was having a mental meltdown, and I coordinated with the Hermiston Police Department to get an officer out there to start taking a look at the situation.
Yep.
He wanted to get to the VA to get mental help for his, you know, addiction problems and stuff like that. His daughter was literally running to Hermiston. Social worker shows up on the scene and just totally screwed it all up. When I'm begging for them just to get him, you know, in the vehicle with the daughter so they can go on their merry way. He was drunk, he was stoned, and they ended up letting him go, blaming the daughter for, you know, being disruptive when she's trying to help her dad out. She's 21 years old. She was left on the side of the road. The social worker called me a liar because I didn't see the incident via video whenever he assaulted her, grabbed her cell phone, and hung up. And she's screaming as he's hanging up, call 911, Joe. I did. And totally screwed it all up, and I mean, that was just absolutely frustrating. Seeing a veteran in need who was willing to help out or go to treatment to get in, I had him a bed all set up. All he had to do was show up at the VA hospital, but the social worker screwed it up totally.
What did she believe was the right answer for this man?
What was that?
What did she believe was the right answer for this man? Was she saying he doesn't need to go to treatment, we'll just cut him loose? Because that's what the end of the incident was, right?
That was the end of the incident, and they cut him loose. He ends up driving drunk and stoned, and it turns out later, whenever the daughter picked up the car, he had so much drugs and fentanyl in his car, and I'm begging him, at least arrest him. That's a start.
Yeah, if you'd arrested him, he'd have been in front of a judge. A judge would have said, you can get help. We want you to get help. You're going to have to give up the drugs. A reasonable solution. And the social worker messes it up. It's Thursday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be?
The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I think you've heard me say it before, that if I drank Pendleton whiskey and smoked weed that I bought at LaModa, I don't smoke weed, by the way, but if I did both of those things, I couldn't make up stuff half as crazy as the legislatures of Oregon and Washington and sometimes even Idaho come up with on their own. For example, there is House Bill 2002. Now, we've told you all about it. If you read the mainstream media, they couch this prospective law in the kind of terms that camouflage what it does. Why, it provides gender-affirming care and reproductive health services for all ages. And you say, what does that mean? You say, well, it means that when a kid says he was born a boy but wants to be a girl, we'll chemically castrate him. Well, that doesn't sound as good, does it? And we'll also make sure that if a 10-year-old girl is pregnant, she can get an abortion without mom and dad even knowing about it. What? It says that? I said, yeah. And then the latest piece of it that we've got to tell you about, currently, believe it or not, if you are a young lady who's pregnant, whether you're a child or an adult, and you bear your child, and the child is delivered and either delivers dead or is delivered still alive and you allow it to die, and then you bury the body in the backyard, that's currently a misdemeanor crime. This would make sure that it is no longer a misdemeanor crime. That's how crazy House Bill 2002 is. So I thought I'd talk about it with Pastor Richard Peel, who is from Ben's Victory Baptist Church. Pastor Peel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Appreciate you having me on.
So you're concerned about House Bill 2002, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. With, I would hope, would be millions of other Oregonians.
So what's your organization going to do about it? Because I'd like to see somebody fight this. So far, the Republicans are fighting by staying walked out and denying quorum to the crazy Democrats who want to pass it. But I'm afraid that they're going to be facing, if they don't come back to the legislature, the voter-approved measure says they may be denied the right to ever run for re-election to their seats. I don't think that's constitutional, but that is the law right now, and they may just come back anyway and allow the Democrats to pass this. So how are you going to block it?
Well, I don't know that we have a direct game plan as yet as to blocking it, but today we did hold a press conference down on the state capitol mall. We had about 25 or 30 pastors from across Oregon representing, and I don't know, a couple hundred people turned out live. A few media outlets were there, and we were trying to unmask the bill, just as you mentioned, for the benefit of our fellow Oregonians so they can see what it really would do. We view it as a direct infringement and really an attack on the sanctity of the family unit, and replacing the state really as a protecting agent over our children rather than mom and dad.
Well, I got to tell you, Pastor Peel, I don't have a problem with the state protecting children. If what you mean is if a child is being abused or we even suspect it, the state may have to come in and take a child away if there's evidence a child's being abused. If the child's been the subject of a criminal activity by mom or dad, the state should intervene. But if you mean, and because the Democrats say it this way, if you mean we want to protect this 10-year-old girl by not telling mom and dad she's pregnant, not telling mom and dad we're going to obtain an abortion for her, or not telling mom and dad your son or daughter claims to be of the opposite gender and we're going to make medical, chemical, and perhaps even surgical changes to your child and you don't have any right to know about it, I don't put that in the category of protecting children. I imagine you don't either.
That is correct. We agree at the first statement that proper protection against abuse is necessary and essential function of state, but this certainly would not be protection of anybody but state operators in really defiling our children if they're given that opportunity. You may add also, Lars, furthermore, in that bill, not only do parents not have a right to know, but if parents attempt to interfere or raise a protest or, as the bill says, quote unquote, cause the phone to ring in a clinic, they can be charged with a misdemeanor crime and punished in jail for 364 days.
Yeah, see, I just think there's so many things about this. As a non-lawyer, I think it's unconstitutional to say that a citizen can't call the clinic. And I don't mean threaten the clinic, but call the clinic and say what you're doing to children is wrong. That is your First Amendment right to do that. Now, if you harass people, if you threaten them, if you make them fear for your safety, I'd agree that's a crime. But in this case, they're going to basically open the doors up so that any parent can end up being charged with a crime for trying to actually protect their children, which the state is not. I don't think the state is protecting a child if they endorse the mistaken belief that the child is a boy trapped in a girl's body or vice versa, and then start saying, well, we're going to give you chemicals and surgery and everything else to make that happen, and your parents don't have a right to know, and we're not going to tell them. I don't think that's protecting the child, and I would expect any parent to object to that, and yet we're making parents criminals and driving a wedge between the parents and their kids.
I totally agree with you. In our state, a child can't get a tattoo without parental consent, and yet we're saying that we're going to allow children to reassign their sex without parental consent or knowledge.
So how is it that so many faith-based organizations, churches, most of them, are not standing up and objecting to this? Has it struck you that your faith-based group is in the minority on this, and many of the faith-based groups are actually standing up and endorsing this garbage?
There is a definite divide among Christian sectarian movements today, not just in our state, but across the country. There's no doubt of that. And when it comes to the other ones who would actually endorse, support, get behind this type of legislation, I don't have a lot of conversations with that camp, so I can't really speak to as to their biblical reasoning to support this. But for us, you know, our group, we just believe that God made man in his own image and likeness. He made them male and female, made he them, and that reality needs to be safeguarded and protected for the families to sort through all those other matters and not the state.
I would agree with you. I don't know. Did you happen to bring up that aspect? And it's one I will admit, I don't know every piece of legislation, Oregon, Washington, Idaho by heart. But, you know, the part about abortion, the part about abortion for 10-year-olds, the part about transgender children and not telling parents what's going on and basically subverting the role of the parents and saying, we're going to let the kid do it and you don't have any right to know. But I hadn't even realized until this week that it also took the misdemeanor crime of concealing a baby's body, a born baby's body. And concealing that body, which is now a misdemeanor, it's not a serious crime, and I don't imagine anybody goes to jail and say, no, it shouldn't be a crime to take a dead baby's body and bury it in your backyard or dump it in a dumpster.
Well, and the problem with that is it removes all the ability to investigate the cause of death.
Yeah, it does.
So, and interstate, you know, my concern is, you know, this bill would essentially make Oregon a sanctuary state for kids coming from other states to receive medical, quote unquote, medical procedures here. It would result in the death of a child, abortion, and then the state that they return to maybe has laws against that, but they now have no way to investigate what happened while that child was in Oregon.
That's a very good point. Pastor Richard Peel, he's with a group from Oregon's Victory Baptist Church that's standing up against House Bill 2002, and the Democrats are hot to pass the law. If you're a naysayer, I'll be glad to get your call at 866-HEY-LARS. America's Homeland Security Secretary had a few ridiculous things to say about our current border crisis. We'll get to that next.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, aliens come in the millions or more. Nighttime they sneak past the fences and checkpoints. Joe Biden opened our southern back door. He didn't care if Americans suffered. He didn't care, he was causing a mess. Where is Kamala in all of this chaos, lying to us and avoiding the press?
Do you plan to visit the border?
Not today.
Each night we see more and more of them crossing, costing us more all of the time. Bumbling Joe Biden, he's happy to do it, happy to raise our percentage of crime.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That's our great parody guy, Jim Gossett, and that's an oldie but a goodie from actually 5 months ago. And yet, does it fit today? Today, as Title 42, the federal law that Donald Trump used so effectively, because he was only allowed to use what he already had. A Congress, a Republican Congress, and a Democrat Congress refused to give him any additional legal tools. He used the tools he already had. He got a lot of border wall built, and he enforced the law, and he took American immigration, illegal immigration, to one of the lowest levels it's ever been. Joe Biden has now sent it into the stratosphere. And as of today, Title 42 ends later on today. And when it does, do you know what's going to happen? They're estimating that the number from 2 days ago, 10,300 illegal aliens crossing into America in a single 24-hour period, that number is going to go even higher. So in the last 2.5 years of Joe Biden, we've seen more than 9 million, that's the government's number, 9 million illegal aliens come into America. I mean, that's 2% of our entire population has come into America illegally. So guess what happens? Secretary Mayorkas, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, who seems to have been playing the Sergeant Schultz role, where he stands there at the border and says, we don't have a crisis, as illegal aliens just flood past him. Well, he actually had the temerity to say this. He said, I want you to hear what he said about how, we have laws in America and we enforce those laws. Listen to that.
We are a nation of immigrants and a nation of laws. We are doing everything possible to enforce those laws in a safe, orderly, and humane way.
Yeah, can you see the evidence of that? Tens of thousands of people in just days entering America. The numbers ramping up. And now the Biden administration, as we've documented on this show, literally using an encrypted online app called WhatsApp to be able to communicate with Mexico without being on the record saying, okay, send the next group of a couple of hundred. Send the next group. So they're speeding the entry. You know, I think that's what Mayorkas, who ought to be impeached today. If the Republicans had a backbone, they'd haul this guy up, file articles of impeachment, and say, you have committed high crimes and misdemeanors. You have lied to the Congress. You have opened up our border. You have facilitated, aided, and abetted the entry already of 9 million illegal aliens. And now we're looking at the prospect that if you thought the last 2 years were bad, it's going to get a whole lot worse. And yet Mayorkas sits right there and says, yeah, this is how we planned it. Listen to him say that.
We expected to see large numbers of encounters initially. We are already seeing high numbers of encounters in certain sectors. This places an incredible strain on our personnel, our facilities, and our communities with whom we partner closely. We prepared for this moment for almost 2 years, and our plan will deliver results.
Plan will deliver. This is the result they're delivering. They're not delivering success. And Donald Trump, for all the criticism of Trump, he used the laws on the books, the resources he had, to be able to handle the problem and bring it to one of the lowest levels it had ever seen in American history. And now the bumbling idiots like Mayorkas and Biden. Well, you know, Mayorkas literally says, we can't solve this problem unless Congress passes new laws. He actually said that. Listen.
Our current situation is the outcome of Congress leaving a broken, outdated immigration system in place for over 2 decades, despite unanimous agreement that we desperately need legislative reform. It is also the result of Congress's decision not to provide us with the resources we need and that we requested.
Now, let me tell you why you can call BS on this immediately. If your friends say, well, you know, Border Patrol, they don't have enough resources. They don't have the laws. Well, guess what? The really handy example is look back 3 years to the end of the Trump administration, when Donald Trump had brought the levels of illegal entry to America to a new low in American history. So if Mayorkas wants to make the case, well, we can't get this job done without new laws and a lot more money and a lot more people. Well, then how come the last guy, Donald Trump, the guy you hated, the guy with orange hair, how come he could get it done with the resources when you wouldn't give him a wall, you wouldn't give him new laws, you wouldn't give him extra resources? He got it done, and now you're saying we can't get it done? Well, at that point, Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas drops right back into Sergeant Shultz territory by saying, oh, no, 10,000 people a day, 9 million the last 2 years. No, the border is not open. He actually said it. Listen.
I want to be very clear. Our borders are not open. People who cross our border unlawfully and without a legal basis to remain will be promptly processed and removed. An individual who is removed under Title 8 is subject to at least a 5-year ban on reentry into the United States and can face criminal prosecution if they attempt to cross again.
Yeah, you know why that's BS? They just caught a guy who came in 09. He's a accused serial killer. He was allowed to come into the country under DACA from Obama, the law, not really a law. He was allowed to stay in America, and now he's accused in a spree of serial killings. And when he says, oh, these people are promptly removed, let me tell you where Secretary Mayorkas actually admits out loud why that is a lie. Listen to this soundbite, and I'll explain it.
During the first half of this fiscal year, we returned, removed, and expelled more than 665,000 people. We are conducting dozens of removal flights each week, and we continue to increase them.
Now, here's why that's BS. He says, we've removed 600,000. You've allowed 9 million in, and you removed 600,000? Do the math on that, folks. That's a 15-to-1 margin. So you let 9 million in, you kick out 600,000. You know, this is a person who says to his wife, hey, you know what? I know we've got 15 holes in the roof, but I've closed a couple of them. And she says, yeah, buddy, the water is still coming in through the roof. That's what Mayorkas is trying to sell to Americans. We're doing our job. The border is not wide open. We don't have literally millions of illegal aliens flooding in per year. And now it's going to get worse when in a few hours, Title 42 simply goes out of existence. And he says, we can't possibly get it done with the resources and laws we have. Well, Donald Trump got it done, and I think American voters are hearing that message loud and clear. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Would you believe it? Coming up next, Joe on the Radio Northwest Network, Joe Biden's not just coming for your guns. He's coming for your dishwashers, and we'll talk about that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You remember when Charlton Heston famously said, you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Well, I may not feel quite as passionate about my dishwasher, but I really resent the idea that President Joe Biden and his energy department have decided to take away my dishwasher and say, we're going to give you one that's so much better. Except that better in the eye of the Biden administration is not really better in my eye. And I'll give you all the particulars, but I thought we'd bring on Daniel Turner, the president of Power of the Future. Daniel, welcome back to the program.
Lars, always great to be on with you. Thank you.
Now, they may have to pry my dishwasher from my soapy, cold, wet fingers, but what is it exactly the Department of Energy is proposing to do to us? Because this isn't their first go-round with dishwasher requirements that have made machines that don't work as good as the machines did in some ways 10 or 20 years ago. Tell me what they're doing.
No, it's not. And we've seen this everything from low-flow toilets and shower heads and when you have these types of folks in office, statists, and Joe Biden is a statist, he believes in the power of big government, and he believes it's benevolent in its actions, they come up with these requirements outside of the free market, outside of principles of physics or engineering. Jennifer Granholm is announcing these requirements, and you want to ask her, as the Secretary of Energy and a lawyer by trade and a politician by the grace of the devil, you want to ask her, what does she know about dishwashers? That's a very honest question. What do you think you understand? Do you know more than the Maytag does? Or even if you do think that, do you know more than the American people? And, you know, there's a phrase in our wonderful declaration that has been echoing in my head nonstop, and I think it's so important. One of their grievances was the grievance of acts of pretend legislation. And that's what this is. Even back then, our founders hated these little rules that came from petty dictators that interfered in their life. And the reason why it bothers you and why it bothers me is it's in our DNA to be free and have free choices.
And by the way, Daniel, I think anybody, my granddaughter could understand this. When we first taught her to wash her hands on her own, you know, because she's only seven, we said, you got to use lots of water and it should be warm water. Well, that's a concept a five-year-old can understand. And you say, so what is the Department of Energy doing? They're going to say, well, your current dishwasher is allowed by the federal government to use 5 gallons of water, and we think you ought to use about three-fifths that much. So we want to reduce the water by almost 40%, but we promise you, cross our heart and hope to die, it'll still get your dishes clean. I think that would belie the rule I taught my granddaughter. You got to wash your hands, use plenty of water, and make sure it's nice and warm. But don't stint on the water. It's an important, or the soap. It's an important part of getting your dishes clean. Why are they doing this? What is the goal they hope to accomplish?
It's all for their larger green agenda. It is definitely as part of their efforts to combat climate change. It's part of their efforts to use less, because we are producing less electricity because of these terrible wind and solar projects, which are not working, and because we've taken nuclear and natural gas plants offline. So that's the ultimate reason why they're doing it. But even their pretend you will get a good appliance has never been proven true. Again, going back to the previous examples, heck, some of your wonderful listeners know this for a fact. If they've put clothes in the dryer, that they have to dry twice. And they say, man, my grandmother's dryer worked really well, but this expensive $1,000 dryer I have does not work well. How many times do you have to now pre-wash your dishes? Because your dishwasher doesn't work as well. A lot of times you flush the toilet twice, because we're not allowed to have 2 gallon toilets anymore. We can only have 1.2 gallon toilets. And so we don't end up saving energy. We don't save energy. We don't save water. We end up using more because the products that they force upon us do not work.
And one other effect, Daniel, I was in, Tina and I were in Canada a few years ago, and I was talking to a guy, and I said, what do you do? And he says, I'm a plumber. I said, oh, I hate those low flush toilets. He says, they're illegal up here. Now, I don't know if that's still the case, but I said, why are they illegal? He said, you don't flush enough water down, to be polite about it. The solids don't go all the way down the pipe. They get stuck and you create plumbing, you know, problems. And I said, well, I'm glad you realize that and Canada realizes that, because in America, that's what they're doing. So there may be even an effect you can't even see with your own eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And this is because people like Jennifer Granholm are not plumbers or electricians or mechanical engineers. And you have to trust, and this is the difference between us and statists. We genuinely believe that the Maytag company or the Sears and Roebuck company wants to make a great dishwasher. They want to make good washing machines. They want to make good products. Joe Biden ultimately believes the free market is bad. He believes corporations are bad. He thinks they're evil and greedy. It's the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democrat Party that has taken over. And they truly believe, but for their intervention, but for government, we would be screwed by all of these different companies. And that's not been the case. It's never been the case. Look at your smartphones. Look at your so many millions of other products. And so it's, again, it's these acts of pretend legislation, government sticking its nose in our lives little by little. And the American people are getting so tired of being told what is banned from their livelihood by people. You know, Lars, and I know Jennifer Granholm doesn't load a dishwasher anymore, and Joe Biden doesn't do laundry, but they're going to tell you what type of appliance you can have.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do laundry. I fold laundry. I do laundry. I also load and unload dishwashers. My wife would tell you that, and she does too, but I do most of it. Daniel, I got to tell you, the part that makes me the angriest is they're trying to sell Americans, and, you know, I don't do the higher math, but the regular nuts and bolts, you know, math. Check this out. They were bragging the other day, this new standard is going to save American households $168 million a year. And I know Americans are going to hear that and go, that's a lot of money. Well, I checked just to make sure I knew the number because I had a pretty rough idea. There are 130 million households in America. You say, so that means every household is going to save $1.20 a year or about 10 cents a month. And then it gets worse if you believe the Department of Energy and they say these new fancy dishwashers, which use 60% of the water, they're only going to cost $15 more. Even if that turns out to be true, which I suspect it won't be, that means you'll save $1.20 a year, which ain't much. And you're going to pay $15. So what's the payoff? It's somewhere around 15 years if you don't count the interest on the money. If you do, it's probably more like 20. And I would venture to say most people like me would say, you're not going to get most dishwashers to last for 20 years. It ain't going to happen. So they're basically selling on $168 million in savings, which sounds great until you shorthand it, which I think most reporters ought to do, say why this is going to save the average American household 10 cents a month or 2.5 cents a week. I mean, if you put it that way, it sounds like, you're going to make me do all this and buy a new dishwasher, and it's not going to wash my dishes, and it's going to save 2 gallons of water, and it's going to save me 2.5 cents a week, 10 cents a month, $1.20 a year, and I got to pay 15 or 20 or 50 bucks more to buy it? Forget about it. I'm not buying it unless, of course, the Energy Department forces you to. Daniel, tell people where to find Power of the Future online.
PowerTheFuture.com, and always great to be on your program and talk about these important issues because they are important and they are eroding our freedoms, and we need to have more voices like you. So thank you, Lars.
It is always my pleasure. That's Daniel Turner. And I'll tell you what, I would take a naysayer in a heartbeat if somebody says, Lars, it's worth saving. It's worth spending another $15 or $20 to save 2.5 cents a week. And the Biden administration is just looking out for our best interests. Call me up if you're that naysayer. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up, I'll get to your phone calls and your emails, and I'll tell you about some Northwest schools that want to cancel Mother's Day. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Can you believe it that in the public schools, they want to eliminate Mother's Day? I heard from a listener. We've asked him about coming on. We've also asked the school district about coming on. We got a no in both cases. Lars, I have two teenagers in the Hawkinson School District. They've been in the district since kindergarten. I would say Hawkinson does a great job overall, but we've had our share of incidents like this. But this current event goes too far. I was approached by a neighbor who has two kids in Hawkinson Elementary. Below is a quote from the school to kids and parents. I believe this was not a lone teacher, but being a force onto the teachers by the administration. It says, you can do Mother's Day crafts from home if you want. Now, do I think that it's a necessary part of education to say that, you've got to celebrate Mother's Day or Easter or Christmas or Halloween or anything else? No. If you told me tomorrow we're going to focus on education, we're not going to do any celebration of Valentine's Day or any other holiday, we want to focus on education, I'd be the first one to endorse that. But if they're going to say we're going to celebrate some holidays, Eid or Ramadan or whatever, but we're not going to celebrate others, and their reasoning is that some of the kids don't have a mom or don't have a dad for Mother's Day. Father's Day usually falls in the summer outside of the school year. Mother's Day does not. When I was 10 years old, my mom died. I didn't have a mom during much of my growing up. Fifth grade, sixth grade, didn't have a mom. Would it have bothered me if other kids were celebrating Mother's Day or making Mother's Day projects at school? And yet that's what they believe, that these little darlings are so delicate that because somebody may not have a mom or may not have a conventional mom and dad, may have two dads, may have two moms, may have one dad and no mom or one mom and no dad, whatever. Do you really think this little kid's going to be triggered? I never was. I don't remember saying, well, they're all making Mother's Day card, but my mom is gone. I thought they loved their mom. I love my mom. She may be gone, but I still love her. I mean, the idiocy of some in the education establishment just never ceases to amaze me. This segment of the show, by the way, is brought to you by our friends at NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Let's go to Armin in Seattle listening on KVI, one of our great Radio Northwest affiliates. Armin, are you a naysayer today?
Well, a little bit. I rarely disagree with you, and this isn't even a disagreement. And by the way, I'm not in Seattle, the heart of darkness. I'm on Maury Island, which is just about as bad.
a little bit of different, but
island.
Yeah. I don't mind if you disagree. Go for it. We love naysayers.
Well, I was just going to embellish a little bit your calculations on the monetary savings from these do-gooder dishwashing regulator people. I calculated that if you pay 7 cents a cubic foot for water and do 2 loads a week and you save that 2 gallons, like you said, the savings is around $1.50 or something. But if you're in a city and on a sewer and your sewer charges are like 4 times what your water bill is, then you have the additional savings there. So you might save around $9.50.
Oh, $9.50. $9.50, right?
For the 50, and they say what? It's a $15 increase in the.
Well, here's the thing. Here are all the brainiacs at the Department of Energy say, oh, when we make all the dishwasher makers reconfigure their entire dishwasher to work on 60% of the normal amount of water, it'll only cost an extra $15 at the store. Now, Armin, I hope you'll forgive me for not believing what government bureaucrats say about the estimated cost of anything, because I think government is extraordinarily bad at estimating anything and everything.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you think that we can't trust our government. Lars, I'm just shocked.
But what about the payoff? I mean, when you tell people, when you buy the new dishwasher, it's not going to use as much water. Anybody who's thinking about it, I'm going to wash something. I'm going to go take a shower, but I'm going to use 40% less water. Well, you know, unless you were using, you know, a lot before, if you use 40% less, you're not going to get as clean. Wash your car with 40%. Actually, there's one where the car washes make out because they use less water to wash your car than you would in your driveway or in your front yard. But these guys have kept themselves busy with all this garbage about let's tell them to retool every dishwasher that is sold in America, whether it's made here or made somewhere else. And we're going to save. I mean, their calculation was savings of $1.20 a year per household, 10 cents a month. That's crazy. And even if they saved on water and sewer, as you suggest, it's still a bad deal, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly not a great deal. But I'll go back to a situation like mine where I'm out in a rural area. We're on a septic tank, not a sewer. So we just pay for water. And some of my neighbors are on water systems where if they're on their own well or whatever, their cost is just the electricity to pump the water out of the ground. It might be a penny or less per gallon per
cubic. I would hope it's less than a penny a gallon because you take a 100-gallon shower and it costs you $1 to take a shower. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, for the non-math majors out there, it's roughly eight gallons in a cubic foot. So for people that are on a well, the savings may be like, you know, 50 cents or 25 cents a year. So this is a sort of one size fits all. It might work for people in the city. I'm skeptical even then. But for people in rural areas, back to your original calculations, it makes no sense.
I'll tell you something, Armin. If you were in business and you did this kind of comparison, because what they're comparing is the gross savings for all 130 million American households compared to the individual cost of the dishwasher, when that is definitely apples and oranges. And the only time you do that kind of comparison is because if somebody said, hey, boss, we're going to save everybody 10 cents a month, you go, well, we can't say that. So do the math and figure out how much it is for the entire population of America, and then you can tell them how much extra it costs in the dishwasher. It is dishonest math from Joe Biden's Jennifer Granholm and from his Department of Energy. You've got the Radio Northwest now.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and it's a pleasure to get to your phone calls. We'll get to those in just a bit. If you want to answer our Twitter poll in the meantime, the question today, Thousands of government workers got fired in both Washington and Oregon for not taking the jab. Now that Jay Inslee has lifted the order that says state workers must be vaccinated, so he will now apparently hire people who are not vaccinated, is it time that Jay Inslee and now Tina Kotek in Oregon should actually hire back some of the fired workers and actually provide good service to the taxpayers? You can consider the question. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I asked you this. Should a small Northwest county grant $1 billion in tax breaks to draw in energy gobbling data centers, in this case, Amazon data centers? I said no. So did 84% of you. Only 16% of you actually said yes to that question. And on that note, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the program our friend Lieve Finna, who's director of the Center for Education at the Washington Policy Center. Lieve, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much, Lars. Great to be with you again.
I'm glad to have you. Tell me how Washington kids in public school are reading.
Well, there's a report out from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction which reports that 40% of K through fourth graders are below grade level in reading, And that's because they are not being taught the tried and true method of deep instruction in phonics to learn how to read, because the schools of education are teaching the teachers to use a method called balanced literacy or whole language, which teaches kids to basically use cues and guess and memorize words to learn how to read, which has proven over the years to not work. I mean, we have the current test scores show 49% of the kids are able to pass a state test in reading. That means, 51% are not passing. All right, 50.
Maybe I've got a dog in the fight. I've got a 7-year-old granddaughter, and I was very involved in helping teach her how to read. And when she reads with me, I get her to sound things out, right? So that's phonics.
Right.
So if you say that's a word, that's a hard word, I say sound it out and you'll get there. And she's a whiz at this point. She's reading. She should be in first grade. She's reading about a third or fourth grade level. She's doing very well. Oh. Was I wrong to teach her that way?
How could it be wrong to teach her to read well? It can't be. If it works, that's what we should be doing with our children, of course, right?
Yep.
But if you are taught in a school of education, which is subject to fads that never get corrected, and years go by, children are not taught how to read well, and no one in the public school system does anything about it, because there's no penalty for failure in public education. And so the people who pay the price, who pay the penalty, are the children who don't know how to learn to read well. And so your granddaughter is now, the fact that she understands phonics means that she can move to higher grade levels when she gets to be in third and fourth grade and she's introduced new words that she's never seen before and there are no pictures and cues to clue her in on the meaning, she can sound out the word and she can actually develop and get even stronger reading skills because she can break down the syllables into their components and understand them and learn that way.
And she can even understand the relationship between different words that sound the same. Say, oh, this one sounds out that way. Oh, that's kind of like this other word, and maybe they're related, and many times words are. Let me ask you this. Now that the superintendent of public instruction has been put on notice that 40% of kids are not reading at grade level, that's an enormous failure rate for the public schools, which, as you pointed out, have had their funding, doubled in the last 10 years, as though more money would solve the problem, and it didn't solve the problem. Is the superintendent of public instruction going to actually make some changes in this?
No, because he doesn't have to, because he has a guaranteed income stream following the children into his system of public education. So, again, he's not held accountable. The legislature's not held accountable. The schools of education are not held accountable because it's a public monopoly run by unions, and they have their government monopoly. And there was a bright spot, which you pointed out to me, Lars, which
was
happening in New York City.
Did I actually get like a broken clock? I got one right every now and then. What was it? I'm anxious to hear.
No, that was excellent. There is a school district in the New York City school district, which is about 1 million students, is the size of all of Washington State in terms of the number of children they're educating over there. They have looked at themselves in the mirror and said, oh my gosh, our kids are not learning to read well because we're teaching them this whole language method of guessing and memorizing. And so they've decided on their own to require deep instruction in phonics now. They're mandating it. And I think that's a good development. And I don't know why New York City is feeling responsible to the children. But what about the people here in Washington State?
I mean, it does seem like the least likely of places to look for right answers, a big, fat, liberal city that is full of unions, wall-to-wall unions, and you say they came up with something right? I don't know. Maybe they got enough pressure from parents.
I don't know, but of course, actually, that's probably exactly it, Lars, because I am aware that a lot of parents have pulled their kids out of the New York City schools after COVID. Because, you know, the East Coast values education in a more intense way than we do over here on the West Coast, sadly.
Okay, let me ask you one quick question. I have this suspicion, Leif, when I was an investigative reporter and a documentary maker, I was told follow the money. And I learned that lesson early on in my 20s from much smarter people. Is there a money reason this is happening? And here's what I suspect. I suspect the fads come along because somebody, either a university professor or a teacher or group of teachers, say, hey, we've got a new way to teach things. And they know if they can catch hold of a fad, they can literally make a lot of money. And they can sell this method to the schools. And even if they buy it and find out it doesn't work in 4 or 5 years or 6 or 7 years, they made the money up front because they sold the curriculum. Yeah. Is that what's happening?
Yes, that happens. That is it in spades. They are subject. Yes, there's a lot of money to be made in public education. You know, I mean, the budget for the public schools in Washington State is $18 billion a year, something like that, right? $19,000 per student on average. So there's a lot of money that is spent on professional development of teachers, on textbooks and the like. And so when there's a new fad out there's money to be made and people to be hired and textbooks to be written and contracts to be signed. It's most definitely that. So again, I think your point about the money, about people leaving the public schools, that could be why there's a change in New York City. It's very possible.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got to push hard to get the schools to perform. And one of the best ways to do that is offer parents and students an alternative place to go. Right now, most communities and most parents don't have that. School choice would give it to them. Leif, thanks so very much. Coming up in a moment, I want to give you some more details on what is our Twitter poll question today about Governor Jay Inslee dropping the jab mandate for state employment. That's next, and your phone calls and email. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get to a few topics here in a moment, but I've kind of neglected callers. So if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism right here, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Naysayers, of course, are welcome to call and go right to the head of the line. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, you'll find that at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And that question, which I'm going to discuss a little further after I've talked to Ron, thousands of government workers got fired for not taking the jab in Oregon and Washington. Should the states hire them back? And my answer to that would be yes. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Oh, Lars, you know me. I'm just, you know, we got to stand up. Number one, that bill, House Bill 2002, what they didn't tell you is House Bill 3275 reinforces the payments to force the parents after they sneak your kid off and everything else. In my opinion, my foster father had to clean up the mess in World War II in Auschwitz and work with the Russian and Poles and DeKalb and Sobibor and other parts of Central Europe, what they don't talk about, with a few bourbon and cigars and vodka traded amongst the officers and NCOs. But overall, we're committing, in my opinion, if this help bill passes, we're violating the Geneva Convention orders on messing with our children. We're violating the Nuremberg Code of mutilating our children because this is legalized gender mutilation without parental consent.
Well, and let me, you want me to really
call it out.
You want me to gross you out? You know about the fact that 2002, this House Bill 2002 in Oregon, it's one of the reasons Republicans walked out the door to deny quorum. So that means the Democrats, even though they got a majority, supermajority, they can't vote on the bill because they don't have a quorum, which is required in any legislative body. And right now we're up against the deadline that if they stay out, I think it's another day or two, then all those Republicans cannot run for reelection at all. So that's the punishment that they got the voters to approve of. But Ron, did you hear the part about 2002 that involves dead babies? Not yes. The abortion part.
No. The where they can basically bury them in the backyard and everything else. That's wrong. And that's sickening. It's morbid. Now,
Ron, hold on before you go off on a side trip. I want people to know this because I actually got an email from one of my colleagues saying, hey, where is that law? And I'll tell you what, I'll cite it chapter and verse. You have RCW, Revised Code of Washington, in Washington State. In Oregon, the laws are called ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes, right? It's ORS 167.820. And I'd be glad to send anybody a link to it. And Ron, one of the impressive things, I've been having to look up laws as a reporter for decades, you know, where you say, what does the law actually say about that? Because you'll get people citing a law, say, well, the law says X or the law says Y. And you go, does it actually say that? And so I got in the habit of looking things up and saying, okay, what exactly does the law say? Ron, this is one of the simplest laws on the books in Oregon. It is one sentence long, and here's what it says. Now, just think about what would bring you to say that woman may have violated this law. A person commits the crime of concealing the birth of an infant if the person conceals the corpse of a newborn child with the intent to conceal the fact of its birth or to prevent a determination. Here's where it gets even more grotesque. The determination of whether that child was born dead or alive. Now, I want you to imagine this, Ron, because we have these stories every once in a while. We've talked about them over the years where a young lady is pregnant, sometimes doesn't even know she's pregnant. She may be a large young lady. And she said, I didn't know I was pregnant. So I gave birth to this child and I took the body of the child and I threw it in a dumpster. Or, you know, I buried it in the backyard. I mean, there literally are grotesque situations like that. So the lawmakers, I can't remember how long ago this passed, but they said that can't be legal if you conceal its birth. I mean, let's say the young lady doesn't know she's pregnant. Okay, she has a baby, and she calls 911 and says, I just had a baby, and the baby is still breathing. It still appears to be alive. Help, help. She would get help, right? Nobody would question it. She said, I want to give the child up for adoption. Okay, we'll help you with that. I mean, there are all kinds of options. And let's say instead, she says, I don't want to be pregnant. She bears the child. I don't want this. I don't want the responsibility. Okay. Okay, so far, you bear the child and you say, I think I'll just leave it in a pile of towels. This has actually happened. We've talked about this story years ago. And I'll go away for a while. And when I come back, you know what happens when you go away and just leave the baby lying there? In most cases, it simply dies. The baby dies. And then I'll hide the remains of the body. We have laws in this country and in every state. One of them is called abuse of a corpse, that you may be able to take the body of your dog and bury it at the bottom of your favorite apple tree on your property or, you know, whatever you're going to do. You can't do that with a human being. We've made it a crime to not properly care for the remains of a human being. And especially because if what she's trying to hide is the baby was alive when it was born, and I simply went away and hung out with my friends for a while, came back later on that day, and the baby was dead, and then I disposed of it, she's concealing what I would call homicide by neglect, I think is a crime. Because you're saying
negligent homicide.
Yeah, negligent homicide because you had a duty as the mother of that child to provide for its care. And even if you didn't have the knowledge or the capability, you call 911 and the people who do will show up at your door in minutes and they will try to save that baby. And if you do make that effort, but you know, the baby still dies, there's no crime, right? But if you don't do it, then you've committed a serious crime. In House Bill 2002, not only does it approve abortions for 10-year-olds without the parents' knowledge or consent. transgender treatment for children without the parent's knowledge or consent, it wipes out ORS 167.820. You say, well, why would we want to make it legal to conceal the body of a dead infant to hide the fact of its birth or whether it was born dead or alive? And this is the monster. I mean, when I talk about Democrats and they say, Lars, you're always bashing Democrats. I'll tell you what, I'd love to hear a Democrat naysayer call me up and say, well, it's okay to have a baby that's born alive, not call 911, not try to do right by that baby, and then bury its body in the backyard the way a dog would bury a bone. I want to hear a naysayer say, I agree with House Bill 2002. That should be legal again. Ron, do you think there's anybody out there willing to say that or admit that they support that garbage?
No. Number two, Lars, I'm going to hit you right on the head with that one.
Go for
my
it.
My foster mother adopted, and my foster father was Tuskegee Airmen, adopted their daughter 7 years ago this month in Germany.
Congrats.
One out of 228 babies, 140 of them, as you said, 1953 Berlin. They left in the thing and let them go. I'm sorry, Lars, it hits me.
I know.
Left them in the cradle and let them die. This is wrong. This is insane. And people got to stand up. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever. A life is a life. You don't cheapen life.
No, you don't. Ron, thanks very much. We'll be back in just a moment. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We're going to talk about the EPA's new standards for the car you might be able to buy. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, they're approaching this issue. I don't say it's a problem because I don't think it's a problem that I get a chance, like you get a chance, to decide what kind of car do you want to drive? What kind of fuel do you want to use? But the Biden administration and others have decreed we want to force everybody to buy electric cars. They tried subsidies first, and they're rather generous subsidies. Buy an electric car, we'll give you thousands of dollars back in taxes, and actually tax credits rather than tax deductions, and there's a huge difference there. And then they said, we'll mandate that all the car makers by, I think, 2030, 2032, have to have two-thirds of the lot filled with electric cars and very few gasoline cars, which is going to artificially increase the cost of gasoline and diesel-powered cars. But now, on top of all that, they may literally try to make it impossible under the rules to be able to buy gasoline or fossil fuel-powered cars. I thought we'd talk about that with Donna Jackson. She serves as the Director of Membership Development for the Project 21 Black Leadership Network. Donna, welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
What are they doing exactly? They've decided that subsidies and coercion and everything else isn't enough. So now they, being the federal government, wants to make it physically or regulationally, if that's a word, impossible to build a gasoline or diesel car or truck?
Yes, actually, they have a new proposed rule out where it's for multi-pollutant emission standards for models years 2027 and later for all light-duty and medium-duty vehicles. What they're actually saying is 4 years from now that they've created a standard that's so stringent that no gas-powered car could actually meet that standard. It would have to be electricity. And this is just, even though we don't have the grid, we don't have the electrical capacity to be able to sustain these vehicles, plus they're so expensive, they're mandating it. You actually have Ford, General Motors, who said they're going to go 100% electricity. So these vehicles won't even be available to us. And they're doing it as a mandate, and they're sneaking it through and with the public not even knowing it. So, you know, most people want to make their own choices for their families. Electric vehicles are more expensive than gas-powered vehicles.
Vehicles.
And the thing is, you have minorities that have a lower income than most of Americans that'll actually be priced out of the market. Really what they're trying to do is take away the ability to own a car and private transportation for the majority of Americans, not just Black Americans, because they already know there's not a single person that hasn't experienced a blackout.
We already saw what happened in California, and they didn't have the capacity to charge their vehicles. They never intended for actually people to be in electric cars. They intend to make it a situation where people don't own cars. They're trying to force people into dense, highly dense urban areas where you have to use public transportation, and it's not even suitable for most people. When you think about African Americans, most of, you know, the U.S. Census said that the median household income for African Americans is $40,000, white Americans $71,000, Asian Americans $101,000 a year. And yep, you're talking about getting an electric vehicle where the monthly car payment is at least $1,000 a month or more.
Holy cow.
You're talking about people who would never be able to afford that. I mean, these are people, this median income is before taxes. So you're talking about making a vehicle more expensive than what a lot of Americans, and especially Black Americans, pay for rent. The other thing, it doesn't fit the lifestyle. Most African Americans rent. They live in multi-family units, like apartment buildings.
Yep.
There's no electric charging stations. They usually park in parking lots on the street. And then 70% of Black households are led by single-parent mothers. You really think that a mother with four kids as a single parent has time to charge up a car in some public place or use public transportation? But that's what they're saying.
I'm talking to Donna Jackson.
To force people.
Donna serves as a director of one of the directors of Project 21 Black Leadership. The other thing about this, Donna, is if the elites who are always going to travel around in big black and white SUVs because that's their privilege, they'll say, well, just take transit, take the bus. Do you know the nationwide number for transit is 5%? And most cities that have transit, it's very crowded during certain hours of the day to almost the point where you have to pass up a train or a bus or two to be able to get one that has room on it for you. Well, if 5% of the American public rides transit and you doubled it to just 10%, if you doubled the population riding transit, there isn't the capacity to do it. And around, these are the best numbers I've got, 76% of Americans own a car. And that car gives them not just personal freedom. Let's go to the beach. Let's go to the mountains. Let's drive to my friend's house. But it's economic freedom, too, Donna. I talked to a woman, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. She called me up and she said, look, my current employer, the restaurant burned, and they're going to have to rebuild it. And I said, that's terrible. Can you find another job? She says, I've got an offer of another job, but it's 7 miles away. And I said, well, can you get there? And she says, I don't have a car. I can't afford a car. And I said, is the bus a possibility? She said, well, my employer, because it's a restaurant, wants me there at 5 a.m. And she said, the buses don't run with any kind of frequency at 5 a.m. So I'd have to take the 4 a.m. bus to be at work on time and then sit around for a half an hour. You know, I mean, in other words, it's an incredible strain. So she said she had to take a job paying considerably less that was within her distance to be able to get to it. The economic freedom to say, oh, you got a job and it's 20 miles away? No problem. I can be there on Monday. I mean, it takes away so many things from people to tell them you can't have a car unless we approve. You can't drive a car powered by gas or diesel. You may not be able to own a car. And all of a sudden, a whole bunch of things, not just family trips on Saturdays, are going to go away for all of those people, aren't they?
Absolutely. And it's not even practical. Listen, if you think about minority communities, they don't have stores and jobs in the community. They have to commute outside. They need a car. The number one reason why people get fired from their job is tardiness and not showing up. And it's because of reliable transportation. It makes no sense. If you are, think about this, you're a mother, you got three kids, some got to go to the doctor, some needs to go to school, some has to go over here to a part-time job, and you're really going to take a bus to take all of these kids to different places and make it? It really reduces the quality of life. We're talking about a quality of life experience.
And it really reduces that because it's not practical. Even in the DMV area in around the Washington, D.C., where they have transit, it's the worst. It makes no sense. What they're basically trying to do is force people to be dependent on the government. That's what they're trying to do. Because you can't get a job in most places. Look, you can't work overtime if you're at a company and you have to depend on public transportation because you have to work with the schedule that the buses have.
Yeah, and imagine this, Donna.
Promotion.
You can't. And Donna, I've got to say goodbye because we're up against a break. But the other piece of that is you tell that young lady she's working until 2 a.m. on overtime instead of 11 o'clock at night. She gets to ride home on transit during the most dangerous hours of the day. That's Donna Jackson from the Project 21 Black Leadership Network. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm live on the Radio Northwest Network. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I got one naysayer who emailed me and said, Lars, I got on the phone. I was on the phone 20 minutes, didn't get on. I'm sorry for that. I wish I had 10 hours a day so I could take nothing but naysayers, but we try to get you as fast as we can, depending on guests, depending on topics, depending on a lot of other things. But believe me, I work my tail off to make sure we get all the voices on this Radio Northwest network that we can. We're glad to serve Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. I've got to tell you about a development in a case that's outside the Northwest. It has to do with a former Marine who is now going to be accused of killing a man. And all he was doing was defending his fellow passengers on the subway. Let me tell you about that in a moment. First, this segment is brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. Call 541-ONA-GEN. That's 541-ONA-GEN. Second item, Governor Jay Inslee has now lifted his demand, his dictate, that state workers had to be jabbed with the mRNA shot. And if they wouldn't do it, then they had to go out the door. And about 2,000 Washington state employees said, well, if I have to get the jab, then I don't have a job. He managed to get rid of a lot of the people who plow the snow, a lot of the people who maintain parks, a lot of the people who drive or operate the ferries in the Puget Sound ferry system. 2,000 employees shown the door because they wouldn't get the jab. Well, now that Jay Inslee has lifted the order requiring state workers to be vaccinated, should he hire those people back? Maybe with an apology, maybe even with some back pay. I mean, the state government doesn't seem to mind handing out your money left and right for all kinds of goofier reasons, and I could give you good examples of that. If he went to those people hat in hand and said, we told you to hit the bricks because you wouldn't take the jab, we've now lifted the requirement, and in light of that, we want to invite you to come back to state employment. We'll restore your seniority. We'll restore your vacation. We might restore your past paychecks that you missed. We'd like you to come back to work for us. Even if some of those workers said, not interested, Jay, you're a schmuck. Even if that happened, the fact is it's the right thing to do. And Oregon should do the same. And the hospital systems that are not government operations of both states should do the same. Because the hospitals of Oregon and Washington managed to get rid of a lot of very good medical professionals, like technicians, like nurses, like doctors and others who worked at the hospital. And when the hospital said, you have to take the jab, and if you won't take it, you're fired. I think those people, I get their jobs back as well. In any case, today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I asked you this. Should a small Northwest county grant $1 billion in tax breaks to draw in energy-gobbling data centers, in this case from Amazon? Morrow County is the county. They're going to give up $1 billion in taxes. In other words, everybody else in the county is going to pay their property taxes. Individual citizens who've been there for decades, I'm not a Morrow County resident, so I don't have a direct dog in the fight, but I can imagine how mad I'd be if they said, look, I've been living here, farming here, operating a business here for 20 years. You don't cut my property taxes, but you're going to cut Jeff Bezos' property taxes at Amazon because he's going to bring in a bunch of centers that don't bring a lot of jobs with them, some construction jobs, some technician jobs, and some jobs as security guards. But other than that, big empty buildings full of computer servers that just gobble up electricity that the region is already running short of. Now, if that makes sense to any of you, I said no to the idea. So did 84% of you. Only 16% of you said yes. Now, let me mention this because I've only talked about this story a bit in the last bit where this has happened. May 1, so 10 days ago, a guy by the name of Jordan Neely, who was a street person, a homeless guy, but he was apparently well thought of, great. He had a big, long rap sheet for assault. He was, in fact, at the moment of his death, he was wanted on an active criminal warrant. What happened? He got on a train. He threatened people. He said, I'm going to kill everybody on this train. And a man by the name of Daniel Penny, former member of the U.S. Marine Corps, 24 years old, saw what was happening and did what nobody else on the train was doing at that moment, and that is defend his fellow passengers. He put the man in a hold, got him down on the floor. Now, at that point, if Jordan Neely, who's no longer with us, he's dead, but if he had stopped fighting, if he had stopped threatening people, I'm reasonably sure that Daniel Penny was, okay, you can get up, but you can't be attacking people. He didn't do that. Daniel Penny kept him in the hold because he kept on fighting. Jordan Neely ended up dying. And now, just in the last 30 minutes or so, we've found out that Jordan Neely, former Marine, is going to be charged with second-degree manslaughter. Now, let me tell you the implications of this quickly. We may bring it up again tomorrow on First Amendment Friday. What you're telling people is the cops are not going to protect you on transit or in public. The courts are not going to protect you. The prosecutors are not going to prosecute violent criminals because we've all seen that happening in the last 3 years. Criminals let go. Police defunded. Courts letting criminals go. Prisons releasing criminals. And now we're being told that if a good citizen like Daniel Penny stands up to defend his fellow citizens, whether it's on a train, on a subway, on a bus, in public, on a public street, you stand up and defend your fellow citizens and you're going to end up charged with second degree manslaughter. You're sending the message, the cops aren't going to protect you and we won't let you protect yourself. And that is dead wrong. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.